Welcome to the Sagebrush Variety Show, sagebrushvariety.org, political commentary and satire. On this week's show, we bring you the next installment of Ukiah Digby for Coroner, a current serial radio play, and also the Sagebrush Variety Show Farm Report on tomatillos. But first, Bucky Bacaw's Backyard Chicken Broadcast on Nest Eggs. I'm producer Gwen Sanchirico. Enjoy the show.
Bucky Bacaw here with the Backyard Chicken Broadcast. In past episodes, I've discussed eggs quite a bit. I won't deny that fresh eggs are in the forefront of most people's minds when they consider the idea of backyard hens. But eggs are only one of the many great reasons that everyone should sign on to the Bucky Bacaw agenda of a few chickens in every outdoor space where it's legal. And surprisingly, that's pretty much everywhere, including suburbia and most big busy cities. The truth is, even if you never eat an egg, sharing your properties with chickens will provide very effective bug control without the use of toxic pesticides, will supercharge your garden with a compost and fertilizer program beyond comparison, and will change your entire view of the concept of pet or companion animals with their charming manners, work ethic, and entertaining personalities. Still, for most of us, whether considering chickening or already with flock, it always comes back to the fresh eggs. Heck, I hadn't eaten an egg for 4 years before I adopted two chicks to eat the earwigs out of my garden, and now, I gotta admit, I'm just a tad egg-obsessed. In one episode, I outlined the difference between factory farm eggs, produced by chickens kept in deplorable conditions, proven in several studies to contain less nutrients than eggs laid by non-factory chickens, and tasting odious. Eggs from the supermarket, with a free-range label which are raised under virtually the same conditions, except with a small door in the factory leading to a couple square feet of outdoor pen, and containing little to no more nutrition or flavor than factory eggs, and the delightful eggs from a backyard small flock of pre-industrial farm-style chickens. On another episode, I dispelled some myths about the egg-laying process and explained how simple it is to provide a small flock of hens the proper conditions for laying eggs. For links and more info on some of the topics I discussed in those episodes, follow the link on the Bucky page at sagebrushvariety.org. But before I move on to other backyard chicken subjects, I'm going to discuss the topic that was most important to me when I started out as a chicken enthusiast. How to be sure you're being kind to your egg-laying hens. A nice gesture is to provide your hens with a nest box, any chicken-sized box with a little bedding in it, placed in a secure spot in the chicken coop, or somewhere that's not too much trouble to get to, but where they also feel safe from predators while they're trying to lay. Realize still, a lot of chickens will pick their own spot. My chickens have approved of my nests from time to time, but they've also made nests in a half-empty plastic bag of shredded pine chips I left near the kitchen door, a cat carrier with its door broken off, which stray cats were using as a night hotel, and atop an old washing machine I didn't take to the dump right away. And whether they choose your suggested nest or a more creative option, some or all of them will pick the same nest, and there's going to be some argumentative clucking going on. Let them work that out. The soft-hearted beginner, like me when I adopted my first chicks, may worry whether it will upset the chickens when we take their eggs. My experience, and what I've heard from other chickeners, is that most hens don't usually seem to miss their eggs, with some variation according to breed and individual personality. A typical hen will leave her nest soon after she finishes laying an egg. Some make a victory call that sounds almost like a rooster crowing, and then go about her other hen business, without seeming to think about it again, and never noticing when it disappears. However, some chickens will poke around looking for their egg, making a fuss, and some will keep on starting new nests in an apparent effort to fool you. A common way of sparing a hen like that anxiety, and keeping them from re-nesting, is to use a nest egg. Nowadays, we think of a nest egg as a little bit of money tucked away, kind of like a retirement fund. But the term originated with the practice of putting a round egg-sized stone or piece of carved wood or other material in the nest to fool an egg-protective hen. kind of like the way these new deferred tax thingamajiggies are supposed to make you feel okay about the government taking away your Social Security. The first time a chicken laid an egg in my backyard, earlier than I'd expected her to, I hopped on my bicycle and raced to the nearest knick-knack store to find a believable substitute. The only thing I could find was an alabaster egg that was at least 3 times the size of a so-called jumbo egg. I feared she wouldn't accept it, but she adored that alabaster egg. Absolutely could care less about her own eggs, but if for any reason her alabaster egg went missing, she'd search the yard, complaining bitterly. Eventually, we got even more chickens, and it turns out every one of them loves the big alabaster egg. One of our flock is a sea brat, one of the 3 smallest breeds of all time, and can barely fit over it, yet they all compete over the nest with the alabaster egg. I've attempted to find other substitutes, so they won't fight over that one, but every plastic, wood, or rock I've tried has been met with utter disdain. Ever so often, a hen's hormones will kick in to a degree that compels her to try to hatch as many eggs as she is sitting on at the time. That's what's called a broody hen. Broody hens are more likely to get upset if you remove the egg or eggs they're trying to hatch. Some breeds or individuals never get broody, and some are broodier than others, but from what I've seen and heard, the nest egg continues to be an acceptable substitute, at least psychologically. All 3 of my hens have attempted to hatch the emu-sized alabaster egg. Obviously, a chicken doesn't know that not only an egg fertilized by a rooster will ever hatch. When a chicken is trying to hatch an egg, they stay on that egg almost constantly. Every day, at some point, they'll get up to stretch, eat a whole bunch of grain, drink a lot of water, and make a really large poop. Then they settle back in on their nest. Eventually, they'll give up on an egg, go back to their normal routine, and start laying again after about a week. One of the hens in the bacaw flock makes me worry she's going to starve herself. After a while, I remove her fake egg, and after a day or two, she goes back to her normal routine. This does seem to cause her a day or two of distress, but it saves her from starving herself. And in the end, I can tell she's relieved to have the whole chemical imbalance of broodiness over and done with. One of my favorite topics is the many ways chickens know how to communicate with each other, with other critters, and with humans. You don't need to be a hen whisperer to tell the difference between a stressed-out chicken and a happy chicken. I'm certain the flock in my yard has less stress in their lives than the vast majority of domesticated or wild animals I've ever met, humans included. I do my part to help them live a stress-free life, but it helps that their needs are so straightforward. In return, they've helped feed me and improved my outlook. I'll discuss this in detail on a future show. For the Backyard Chicken Broadcast, I'm Bucky Bacall. I had a good time. Bucky Bacall's Backyard Chicken Broadcast was produced by the Sagebrush Variety Show with support from Boise Community Radio and the Green Institute.
Are you an upstanding police captain that's constantly under siege by rabble-rousers that protest police brutality and unfair treatment? Are you looking for something to help you quell the complaints of a throwaway underclass? Well, look no more. Here at Suppression Defense Systems, we have developed the new long-range acoustic device, or boombox. This noisemaker is ear-splitting at close range. Used in the Gulf and on hand for the Republican National Convention in 2004, and now being tested by the LA Sheriff's Department, LRADs are one of the weapons of choice to restore the public order. Capable of sending discernible sounds a mile away, the LRAD can operate at 100,000 watts without overheating. Clear sound can be transmitted in the 50 to 20,000 hertz range. You can even hook it up to an iPod as a media source. So, when they cry, no justice, no peace, just pump up the jam with this bad boy and bring him to their knees.
You're listening to the Sagebrush Variety Show, political commentary and satire. Next up, we have Ukiah Digby for coroner.
The scene is a cluttered makeshift campaign office that is actually Ukiah Digby's converted basement. The walls are covered with an assortment of posters from quixotic campaigns of the forgotten past, district maps, and the vintage rock and roll posters that adorned the place when it was Yukaya's childhood bedroom. Yukaya's head is buried in a stack of library books on the topics of campaign strategy, medical pathology textbooks, and the collected works of Noam Chomsky.
Yukaya Digby for Coroner, Campaign Office. Yukaya Digby speaking.
Hello! I'm a little old lady who is too frail to survive an argument and has so many years of accumulated wisdom that you must revere my advice. You seem like a nice young man, but you must withdraw from the race.
I don't mean to be strident or argumentative, ma'am, but would you mind telling me why?
Sonny, as someone who could die at any minute, and therefore has a lot at stake in who is coroner, I'm simply terrified you're going to spoil this election.
Okay, you caught me off guard there. First off, I'd like to thank you for calling the Yukaya Digby campaign line. I'm really excited to talk to every citizen who wants to engage their election hopefuls in meaningful political debate.
Hello?
Okay, now I have to admit, I'm a little confused about how you consider me a spoiler.
How can you be confused? It's a no-brainer, Sonny. Haven't you ever heard of the phrase spoiling an election? How long have you been in politics, anyway?
A little while, but how can I spoil a two-way race? No one should be called a spoiler for participating in democracy.
Young man, I did not call you to be lectured. I'm well aware that the term spoiler was most popularly used after the 2000 election to describe the high-profile three-way race. But when you take something good and try to spoil it, that's spoiling whether it's 30 candidates or 3 or 2 or even 1.
Ma'am, bear with me just a little while longer, if you would. Can I ask you how familiar you are with my stance on the issues? Did you see my announcement speech at City Hall? Or see my pamphlet? Or have you been to my website? Because I really think if you knew my issues, you might not see me as a spoiler, but as a helper or something. And if you don't already know my issues, I'd like to take a moment and run them by you.
I doubt you can say anything in under a moment. I already know all I need to know, and I'm so furious I could spit rocks over you besmirching the good name of someone like Umatilla Kennewick, who has served the public for so long, despite her youthful appearance, and so well.
I don't think I am besmirching Ms. Kennewick's name. I like Umatilla, too. She's polite and attractive.
Thank you.
What?
How nice of you to say that about your opponent. Young man, I'm glad to see you've got some manners. Now, why don't you be a gentleman and drop out of that race?
Well, that's what I was trying to say. The thing is that it's not that I don't like Ms. Kennewick or think she's a bad person. It's just that I think I have some really good ideas on how to run the coroner's office, and I'd like to have a chance to get elected so I can implement them, or at least say them in public so that maybe, if the public and the press and Ms. Kennewick hear them, then even if she's the one who gets elected, maybe she'll use some of my ideas.
Well, why would I use any of your ideas after the way you're treating me?
What? Hold on a second. Ms. Kennewick, is that you? I can't believe this.
Well, I guess I can't get anything past you. You're sure a smart one. Well, first of all, you can call me Umatilla, honey.
Okay, Umatilla. That's very nice, but I just want you to know that this doesn't have to be some kind of battle to the death. I just want to liven politics up a little, get people interested and engaged and involved. And sure, float some of my ideas and see if they can't get me elected, or at least get you to change your mind on a few things.
Well, why didn't you come by and talk to me about your ideas before being such a meanie weenie and running against me?
Umatilla?
Call me Uma.
Well, okay, but anyway, I tried to contact you, but you're never in the office, and you never return my phone calls to the coroner's office or your cell phone.
You can call my home phone, sweetie. I'm always running around as coroner. I tell you it's hell in these heels, but the girl's got to put herself together, right?
Or my emails or reacted in any way to the letter to the editor that I finally convinced the Idaho Registry and Culinary to run. I mean, you shouldn't have to go...
Sweetie! I can tell you have a good heart, and it's nice of you to say I'm attractive. I think you're attractive, too. So why don't we meet at the Marabou Slipper in an hour, have a few drinks, talk to me about your ideas, and fill out your withdrawal from candidacy forms together, hmm? Pookums?
Uma, it's nice of you to offer to be informal about names, but I kind of would prefer you stick to calling me Ukiah. It's just a little too weird to have you calling me Sweetie and Pookums, with you being my opponent and all, and since I'm not going to drop out of the race...
Okay, is that how you want to play it? What do you want? Do you need a job? Do you want to wax floors at the coroner's office? We can arrange a pretty decent salary.
It's not about getting a job, Uma. And why are you saying wax floors and salary like they're in quotation marks?
Well, you little... If that's the way you want to play it, then I promise you will regret this.
Uma, don't take this so badly. It's just politics. It's nothing personal.
I'll mop the floor with you. I'll... Oh, your name will be mud in Idaho politics by the time we're done with this election. And furthermore, you will address me as Ms. Kennewick until further notice. Try never.
That was weird. Guess I should call Martalene about it and see what she thinks.
2 hours later.
Martalene, glad you could come and join the madness in our bustling campaign office.
My pleasure. And don't worry, in a few days it will be controlled chaos in here. I promise.
So... How about that call from Umatilla? Crazy, huh?
Crazy almost seems a generous way of describing it. Too bad you couldn't get it on tape. Hand that to KGOD-TV, and they'd have it on the air at regular intervals, round the clock.
You know, it almost sounds like you're serious. And I don't even like joking about cheap shots like that. She's not so bad. She just needs a few days to get used to the idea of having an opponent. It's like I said, good people caught in a bad system. She's just been habituated to having it the easy way. But once we really get rolling with the campaign, I bet she'll even start to enjoy herself.
If I didn't know you better, I'd think you were yet another guy hypnotized by silicone. I find it more disturbing that you're just that good-hearted. I mean, people say I'm naive, but I volunteered for a few campaigns, and even as an envelope stuffer, you see some kind of scary stuff.
I know, and I know I'm not ready for that. That's why I picked a race that wouldn't be too hot. I mean... Having a handful of friends and relatives die in this town over the last few years got me thinking about ways to improve service in the coroner's office. But mainly, I figured this race was a good way for me and you to get our feet wet in politics.
Okay, here's the thing. When we first discussed me managing your campaign, I thought playing nice was the way to go, with the electorate being so burnt out from attack campaigns.
You still think that, right?
Yes, I still do. But I just want you to accept the fact that in politics, there's going to be a bloody nose or two in any race. I can promise you, Kennewick knows that and is just waiting for her opening. And I really have a feeling she's up to something really bad with that coroner's position.
Oh, what bad thing can you do declaring people dead? She's not too efficient, and I can think of loads of ways to save that office resources and taxpayer money.
Just the same, I want you to know I'm checking up on her background.
I'll be relieved when you find out there's no corruption. I'm sure she's just an old-school politician who needs a little wake-up call. Either that or an excuse to retire early.
Well, either way, we still need to work on messaging.
Messaging?
How you get your message out. I wish you hadn't drawn attention to your bad soundbitery during the Q&A last week. Confession is for televangelists. But I will say I agree with you. I'm willing to forego a speechwriter since you think that's somehow dishonest, but you are going to have to learn to be concise. In public speaking, you have 15 seconds to catch people's attention and 3 minutes, tops, to hold it. For instance, I can see your attention drifting from my little speech right now.
No, I'm totally with you. I was just thinking that there's no way to adequately address all the salient issues in even this countywide race of limited scope. So how can a candidate for legislative office on a state or federal level expect to engender informative voting practices information? I mean... Aren't we just contributing to the dumbing down of America?
I don't know, but if you push the envelope any further, no one will hear you at all. So here's the deal. At seemingly random times when we're working together, I'm going to blurt out a campaign issue, and I expect you to reply with something snappy, followed by a 30-second elaboration. Don't make that face. This is the fun approach, so try to get into it. Believe me, you don't want me to be like other campaign managers and start meting out petty rewards and terrible punishments.
Oh, okay. I'm on board. Now, before I forget, I went to the post office box today, and we got a whole bunch of questionnaires from interest groups. The bad news is that almost every one of them is due literally yesterday.
The truth is, some of these groups don't want you to score well on these questionnaires because they already know who they're going to endorse. If your answers make sense, they have to justify supporting Umatilla when the real reason is they belong to the same political party, or that they're pretty sure she'll win and they don't want to piss her off. But this will be good practice for you, so I'm going to call them and ask them if you can respond over the phone. They can't say no if they're going to pretend to be a nonpartisan issues group.
I thought you were supposed to be the somewhat naive idealist.
I'm a realist. I believe we can make a better world, but I'm skeptical of human nature.
Hello, Firearms Voters United. Harry Glock here.
Hi there. I'm Ukiah Digby's campaign manager, and I'm holding a candidate survey from you folks, and we want to respond, but the deadline printed on this page is yesterday.
Well, I declare, that's a real shame.
The thing is, that's also the date of the postmark on the envelope.
That darn post office? We really ought to get that privatized, don't you think?
I don't know. That's not one of the issues we researched. But how about doing the survey with Ukiah over the phone?
Well, I guess we could do that. Put him on.
You're on. Remember, short answers.
Hello. Fire away.
Hey, I like you already. Question one. How many children do you have?
None. But I don't understand what that has to do with the interest of gun owners, or the coroner's office.
Gun owners are family types, and we like to vote for the same. But don't you worry yet. You know, Boney Maroney is a single guy, and he's been president of the Chuckers Club. Good friend of mine.
I know Mr. Maroney. In fact, he's my image consultant for this campaign. We call him Travis around headquarters.
Well, you can't poke that with a sharp stick. If Maroney's with you, I guess we won't take off points for that no answer to question one. I tell you what, that fella has a heck of a fashion sense, and you know they say women go crazy for a sharp-dressed man, so I have no idea why he's still single. We all like the bachelor life, if you know what I mean. But me and the ward leader have been trying to get him to settle down.
So what's question number two?
Right, I can see you're a busy man. You hunt?
No, actually, I'm a vegan.
That's okay. I'm not one of those Idahoans who holds it against people where they were born at. You hunt?
Well, vegan isn't a place. It's like vegetarian, only I don't eat dairy products or eggs. So it would just be a waste if I shot an animal, since I wouldn't be eating it. What's question two?
Question two is, you hunt?
Oh, well, no. Although I guess I do support subsistence hunting on public land, but I don't see what that has to do with the coroner's office.
Like I say, we like to vote for people who share our values. This isn't good. You really should get Boney to take you hunting. Anyway, question three. So say you get called to a death. There's a corpse with a gunshot wound and a perpetrator holding a smoking gun. How are you going to call that?
Well, in cases like that, the coroner needs to call the medical pathologist to get an official ruling. And there will probably be an autopsy.
Yeah. But on the preliminary form, how are you going to call it?
Suspected death by gunshot?
Oh, I'm not supposed to prompt you, but since you're a friend of Boney's and I hate to see you score a zero, you do know that guns don't kill people. People kill people, right?
I can't argue with the logic of that. But one of the roles of the coroner's office is to keep accurate death data. All kinds of public and nonprofit agencies need accurate statistics on disease, accidents, drug abuse, and violence in order to figure out ways to improve public health and the lives of individuals. If someone gets shot, and I mark it down as a gun-related death, that's just the statistical fact, and it's my job to report it.
Statistics could be used to prove anything, anything at all, and then used to justify taking away my guns.
Okay, I don't know how you can score this answer on your questionnaire, but here's my pitch. I don't think you really mean that I should falsify coroner records, but in reality, that's what you're saying. And here's the thing. You don't want someone in public office who's going to politicize things that aren't meant to be politicized. As a gun owner, you may not care if I fudge some reports to leave out any mention of guns because of your fear, unfounded, I think, that coroner statistics are going to be used to determine gun laws. But what if your friends and family start having, say, heart attacks right after using a cleaning product? The kind of coroner who would falsify records on gun-related death could very easily be persuaded by the cleaning product company, for instance, to cover up those causes of death, and no one would find out that the products were fatal. That is disrespectful of the dead, your family members, and bad for public health.
With all due respect, Ukiah, I don't like the way you're talking about Umatilla Kennewick.
I'm not talking about Coroner Kennewick. I was speaking hypothetically.
Good. Whatever the hell that's supposed to mean. Anyway, good luck to you. If you see Boney, tell him I say hi. I haven't seen him since Chucker season ended. If he's been working for you all this time, I know you can't be all that bad.
Will do.
Bye.
Yeah, I'll be seeing Travis, all right.
Miss Kennewick, Please tell me that the liter bottle of tonic water from which you're guzzling does not contain any gin at 10:30 a.m. on a Sunday.
In the words of the great George Washington, I cannot tell a lie. It's all gin. The bottle's just for show.
Please pace yourself. This isn't one of your wild victory parties. The whole purpose of this picnic is to show you the family values corner. Your opponent, Digby, has no children or even wife. We've got to press that advantage.
And press we will. Don't worry about me. I can hold my liquor. You know that. Just make sure you have a full staff looking after those grandchildren. If 10-year-old George gets busted for meth again at the picnic right in front of the press, we're in trouble. And he's the soberest one of the 49 of them.
At your instruction, I got one undercover nanny for each grandchild. Believe me, finding 49 individuals discreet and trustworthy enough for the job was not easy. Or cheap.
So what clean fun do we have for entertainment for the normal children?
Pinata, dunking booth, and water slide.
Who put all that together?
Our volunteer for every year, 27 years running, Lodi Tundip.
I didn't know he had carpentry skills.
Well, he does. We just never had much volunteer activities to assign to him before.
And we'll be needing a lot more volunteers soon. I hear Digby's been going door to door trying to meet every voter in the county. Even my friends are saying he's a nice young man. Dumb old biddies will respond to anything in pants.
I'm on top of it. I just hired a youth coordinator. This guy is a genius with the 18 to 28-year-old crowd. He can market Geridol to a teenager. They call him the Tiger. It's gonna be great. After today, we'll have a lock on the family and flag crowd, and before Digby knows what hit him, we'll be stealing the youth vote out from under him, too.
Sounds great. Let's get a plate of chorizo and hold the buns. I'm on a diet. Can't afford another tummy tuck this year. Quick, I can see the guests and press getting out of the parking lot, and rule one of politics and showbiz is never let anyone see you eat.
The picnic is now in full swing. The smell of chorizos is thick in the air. And voices of happy children and gossiping parents ring out for miles, drawing ever more weekend strollers to the park to join in the fun. Umatilla Kennewick stumbles on stage drunkenly to take the microphone.
Whoops, I guess these heels are a little high for a Sunday picnic. And you folks probably can't see, but the stage floor is uneven and wet from all the sprinklers. I nearly choked on the pretzel I was eating, and what's worse, I almost spilled my non-alcoholic beverage. Anyway, welcome to the first annual Coroner's Office Flag and Family Picnic. First off, let me assure you that this event was paid for entirely from my considerable campaign war chest. No funds were diverted from the modest tax assessed by the Coroner's Office. There are some coroners in less fiscally conservative districts that would squander your tax money on pork barrel projects euphemistically called public education events. But the only pork at Umatilla's picnic is in your chorizos. Secondly, I'd like to apologize for not throwing a flag and family picnic in previous election years so I can get to know all of you and your families and share our family values. Let it not be said that I won't admit when I'm wrong. And finally, I'd like to thank Ukiah Digby for stepping into this year's coroner's election. If it wasn't for his noble, if hopelessly quixotic campaign, I wouldn't have started thinking outside the box and adding these fun events to the usually dreary election cycle routine of debates and interviews. Unfortunately, he seems to have not been able to make it here, even though I told my staff to send him an invitation. I guess because he doesn't have a family, he felt awkward. What a shame. I don't want to keep you folks any longer. I can just hear those sausages getting cold. I just want to say that being coroner is not just some bureaucratic elected thingy to me. I think of it as my Christian duty, because when someone from your family crosses over, it's important that the coroner's duties be performed by someone of faith. Thank you. Thank you. Lyndon, am I a born entertainer or what? That crowd went wild.
Miss Kennewick, I cannot tell a lie. Everyone cheering was paid to stand in front of the stage waving your signs and audibly responding to whatever you said. And I told you not to mention Digby's name. At this point in the race, he's still a relative unknown. And anything you say, good or bad, just gives him more name recognition and credibility with potential voters and the press.
Lyndon, shut the up. What the f*** is that Digby and that campaign manager of his, Marlene Mascarpone, doing here? That really cheeses me off.
That's what you get for inviting him.
I didn't invite that bum. You must be drunker than I am to be believing one of my speeches. Watch this. I'm going to give that two-bit amateur and his floozy sidekick a dose of Kennewick psychological warfare.
Well, take the path. If you slip on the grass in those hills, and in your state of inebriation, it's going to be front-page news.
Ukiah, Mardeline, I'm so glad you could make it. Don't tell me you two are an item. That would be so sweet if you finally discovered the family way. Coming to see how a real politician works? Lesson one, see how I pat you on the back and look like I'm engaging you in casual banter, but I'm actually telling you that if you mess with my voters, if I catch you kissing a single baby at this event paid for by my considerable war chest, you are going to meet with an unfortunate accident.
Will you look at that? I know we're too far away to hear what Ms. Kennewick is saying to that young upstart, threatening her wonderful record, but I can just tell, even from here, that she's being her usual and gracious and Christian self. I tell you, she is just too kind.
Maybe someone will accidentally slip some chorizo into your vegan potato salad and everyone will see you rudely choking on this good family value.
Oh, Matilda, I'm really starting to get upset by your hostility.
Well, well, I'm so glad to see you two could make it. Hey, Digby. Mardeline.
Hello, Lyndon.
Come to see how the other half campaigns?
Yeah, the soulless corporate mercenary half.
Temper, temper, mon capitan.
Hey, that's a quote from Star Trek Next Generation. I can't believe a creep like you watches the most progressive science fiction show ever to air on television.
You'll find I'm full of surprises, my dear. As you may recall, that phrase is the most oft-repeated line spoken by the omnipotent and godlike character Q, who shows up to meddle in the affairs of Captain Picard and his crew and the pilot, and subsequently in episodes 102, 111, 142, 161, 194, 232, 241, and the season finale. Very amusing episodes, to say the least.
I hate to break up this little Trekkie convention, but...
I'm not a Trekkie. I'm a Trekker.
Yes, Miss Kennewick. Please get it right.
Whatever. As I was saying, my professional campaign manager and I have some meeting and greeting to do with our voters. So make yourselves at home, Ukiah and Mardeline, but not too at home. Will you just listen to those squeals of delight from the children in the play area? We sure know how to throw a party.
Those don't sound like happy screams. I better run over there and check it out.
Language, Lyndon. Don't get all overwrought. Kids will squabble.
Lodi, what the devil is going on? Why, the kids are coming out the water slide all scratched up. How did you make that?
Why, I just put down some old crap plywood, staple gun some heavy-duty garbage bags to it, and pointed the fire hose in that direction.
Sweet mother of pearl, little kids injured by splinters, staple cuts, and fire hose enemas. How am I going to keep this off the 6 o'clock news?
The scene is Ukiah Digby's converted basement campaign headquarters. Ukiah reaches up to a raised platform in the corner of the office and turns on an old black and white television held together by duct tape and ill-fitted salvage parts. He adjusts the antenna, which looks like a five-point antler made out of rescued coat hangers, and finally...
Breaking news from City Park! A faulty water slide at County Coroner Kennewick's campaign event resulted in some minor bruises and lacerations. The clip here shows candidate Umatilla Kennewick carrying a toddler to a waiting emergency vehicle.
You gotta admire the speed with which Umatilla carries that toddler to the ambulance while wearing such fashionable heels.
Since I always wear men's clothes even in the privacy of my own home, I'll have to take your word for it. Anyway, apparently everyone had quite a scare when they heard the young one screaming for help, but it turns out that the little scamps were crying wolf. No major injuries were reported, so no harm, no foul. But let that be a lesson to all you do-it-yourselfers out there. The safest bet for summer fun is to go down to your local Walmart just off the Beulah exit from the interstate and buy the Schneck and Tom Circlefoot Wacky Water Slide by Rocco Sports. I love that Schneck and Tom character.
So, how about this heat? Let's turn it over to KGOD meteorologist Sunny Day for the microclimate reports for each of the 23 neighborhoods in the metropolitan region.
I can't believe that carnival of extreme negligence that descended on children is getting the softball treatment. We have got to get out and tell the truth about what happened there.
We'll just look like a bunch of desperate sore losers grasping at straws. I mean, if the parents are going to insist nothing happened, what can we say? I was having dinner with Travis, my campaign image consultant. Well, you know he's my boyfriend. Anyway, he tells me that the Kennewick campaign made donations from her considerable war chest to the Chucker Stalkers Club and other charities favored by the parents of the not-injured children that very night. I was kind of shocked to find out that it's legal for a campaign to donate to charities or even other campaigns. And in this case, it especially seems fishy. But I guess it'll all come out in the finance reports.
That is so hush money. You're right, we can't make a big deal out of it, but maybe I'll call that Binky Sheds from the Weekly Independent and convince him to do some old-fashioned muckraking. It would be about time. And we need to explain to people that this paid for purely by my own considerable war chest and not your tax money stuff is pure bunk. She is never not collecting campaign donations since she found out that you can legally accept donations year-round if they are used to defray ordinary and necessary expenses incurred in connection with her duties. Am I crazy, or shouldn't somebody be noticing that she's getting monthly donations from OPIAFTA?
Who?
The organ providers of Idaho and America's Free Trade Agreement lobby, for whom, by the way, she arranges a lot of lucrative body parts deals to plastic surgery clinics and then spends it on ordinary and necessary expenses, like 3 martini lunches at Le Fondue and shoe purchases from Bella Crespo's. How come no one cares about that?
I care. She can't do that. I mean, obviously she can, but that's not right. That kind of pisses me off.
Did you just say pisses me off? Yay, I need you to be at least a little angry.
This needs to be a campaign issue, Martellene.
Well, since you're twisting my arm, okay, boss.
Also, Martellene, I signed the organ donor card. Are you saying my parts could be used for something not life-saving?
I'm sorry to have to tell you this. I mean, it's a nice thing to do, organ donations, and I guess the way the program is supposed to work is that your organs save someone else's life after yours is over. Or at least give normalcy to people who have been badly disfigured. But there are a lot of loopholes in the regulations, and most of the organs go to plastic surgery for the vain and wealthy, or to medical schools that practice plastic surgery on your parts.
Sounds like our campaign volunteers are showing up. We need to talk about this a lot more, but later. Welcome to Ukiah Digby for Coroner Campaign Headquarters.
Hello, I'd like to volunteer.
That's terrific. What's your name?
I'm Hans.
Good to meet you, Hans. I'm Ukiah Digby, candidate for county coroner. And this is Martellene Mascarpone, my campaign manager.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not a citizen. I'm a foreign exchange student. Is it okay if I work on your campaign even though I can't vote?
Well, you're in this country, you have a stake in how things are run, especially if you have work study and pay taxes on that. Some of your taxes are going to the coroner's office. And if you die, well, if someone you know dies, you'd definitely wish you had a say in who was coroner, right?
Well, if you put it that way.
Hey, I don't know where you're from, but in one of my poli-sci classes, I learned that some 22 foreign countries allow non-citizens living in their countries, including citizens of the United States, to vote in their local elections. So as far as I'm concerned, you should be able to vote.
Well, I'm from Dusseldorf, and I don't think that my host family or most of the Idahoans that I've met would agree with you, but thanks, I guess.
One of my political heroes, Matt Gonzalez, he's president of the Board of Supervisors of San Francisco, introduced a ballot measure to allow non-citizen parents of schoolchildren to vote for school board members.
Well, I thought Matt Gonzalez was mayor of San Francisco.
He should be. He ran and was only a percentage point away, supposedly. Personally, I think that the election was stolen. City workers were campaigning for his opponent on the taxpayer's dime. I bet some of them thought they'd lose their jobs if they refused. And his opponent, a Democrat, shipped Bill Clinton all the way over there to claim that if the city elected a Green Party mayor, it would somehow result in Republicans taking over the whole country, as if they haven't already.
That's frightening. I'm glad I'm just running for lowly coroner. I don't think I'm prepared for any dirty tricks.
Yeah, well, you should be prepared. No race is too lowly to bring in the big guns if someone has a snowball's chance in hell to actually change politics as usual. Anyway, Matt Gonzalez says Amherst passed a similar proposal in 1998 to grant voting rights to immigrants in some of the local elections and is now waiting for approval from the state legislature. Chicago and New York City have always allowed non-citizens to vote in local school board elections.
Well, yes, and I don't wish to lecture you in North American history, but I learned in grade school that prior to the First World War, immigrants in the United States were allowed to vote in local, state, and national elections in several states.
Wow, that's amazing. I have to admit, I didn't know any of that. So, what got you interested in helping us?
Well, I was raised to believe that everyone should get involved in politics, but to be honest, this time, it was just a good excuse to get away from my host family.
Really? I thought host families spoiled foreign exchange students with cool cultural experiences and camping trips and...
You guys seem like you'd understand. Well, let me tell you what transpired over the breakfast just this morning. Good morning, Lester.
Gluten tag hands.
Yeah, guten tag.
You sure you didn't want some bacon with that cereal?
No, I'm still a vegetarianer today, you remember?
Suit yourself, but you better wolf that breakfast down. Bible study starts in 20 minutes, and it's a 5-mile drive.
No, really. I don't think I will be going.
Come on, Hansy. Remember, you got to take part in the American experience.
Well, yes, I was thinking that since I am an exchange student, we should be exchanging experiences, and perhaps I won't be studying the King James Bible any longer until you study my Bible with me.
We really shouldn't be reading anything besides King James, Hans, but I guess in the interest of being fair and balanced, I'm probably spiritually ready to take a critical look at the new revised standard, even if it was written by liberals and Jews. Just please don't let my dad get wind of this.
Well, I mean a very different Bible. I get my spiritual inspiration from the Bhagavad Gita.
No way! The only thing I know about that is forbidden, with a capital F.
Why, it seems we have reached an impasse, so I'm so surprised.
I don't have time to argue about it now. You can skip Bible study today, but we're gonna talk about this later. But you're still going to the Snake River Stampede Rodeo.
No, I don't think so.
Is it because you're a vegetarian? You don't have to eat anything, you can just watch. It'll open up your eyes.
Well, I think my eyes are open enough already.
I know you were arrested for protesting horse racing over in Europe, but first of all, these are American livestock. They're tough. They deserve what they get, and they enjoy the challenge. And secondly, you already confessed to me that you only started protesting and stopped eating meat to impress your girlfriend, and she's hundreds of miles away right now and will never know, so you're going.
It was to impress a girl, but then I realized she was right. Women are smarter than men, Lester.
You're scaring me.
Well, listen, I would go to the rodeo with you, but I already promised to do something with some people, and they're really counting on me to be there.
Who?
Well, you know, the Ukiah Digby for Corner campaign.
Whoa, that sounds kind of political.
It is thoroughly political. Don't you agree that North American electoral politics should be part of my cultural experience while I'm in your country?
No, I don't. Especially not if the candidate is a guy with mussy hair. He's not fooling anyone. He's obviously a liberal. I can't stop you from doing your own thing today, but Mom and Dad are going to have a cow when they hear about this.
So that was my morning. I'm sorry I use you guys as an excuse, but I really do want to help.
The scene is Umatilla Kennewick's campaign headquarters in Ye Olde Town Mall of Idaho's seasonal space. Soon after the campaign, the Holiday Sausage gift basket store will occupy the space. Everything is themed in red, white, and blue. The walls, the desks and phones, and Umatilla, who's wearing a white silk blouse, a blue knee-length skirt, and red pumps. The banner in the front of the store reads, "Vote Kennewick, a coroner you can believe in." Flanking the entrance is a large ceramic elephant and a wooden Indian.
Well, the mall is going to be open in 15 minutes, and I'm raring to go. If the volunteers don't show up soon, I'm going to have nothing better to do than eat all these hot, sticky Cinnabons myself.
Careful. I just spent your tummy tuck funds on renting campaign headquarters.
What was that? I could swear I just heard a dietary recommendation from the Pillsbury Doughboy.
You misheard me, Miss Kennewick. I was saying they'll be here soon.
We are the punks! We are the punks! We are the punks!
Oh my god, it's a hooligan riot!
No, I think that's your new campaign team. The older guy in his 20s at the front is your youth coordinator, Claude Harrycoat.
He has sharp metal in his face. What are we going to do, scare people into re-electing me?
Miss Kennewick, trust me. I was reading the most recent issue of the campaign manager's newsletter, The Monthly War Room, that there was a most compelling article which explained that the youth vote is the hot target population in this season. Fickle yet loyal, disaffected yet passionate, short of attention span yet keenly focused on the issues. Every campaign manager who's anybody simply must have a youth consultant. Your opponent's campaign manager was only recently a co-ed throwing pajama parties and taking classes in courting the youth vote in a highly rated political science program. She knows the youth vote is the way to go, and we must strike preemptively to capture that flag.
What the hell are you talking about? This is Idaho. Everyone in politics was born before 1950, and we're still using our high school graduation photos for our campaigns because everyone who votes either graduated with us or chaperoned our proms. And what do pajama parties have to do with anything? If you're just trying to court the youth vote to impress Martellin in some weird courting ritual of the campaign manager species, I'll be donating your organs to the Rocky Mountain Oyster Festival next month.
Just be nice to the punk rock people. Call them dude, and tell them you chafe against authority. Claude says they love that stuff.
Dude, this is so badass that a political campaign headquarters is right next door to the Hot Chop store where I buy all my ethnic punk rock gear?
Awesome! Let's do this thing. Matilda, Lyndon, I want to introduce you to the vanguard of your youth volunteer crew. Squiggy, Jeff, Hazel, Augustine, Ben, and Allison. These are the best and the brightest. They're gonna hit the streets for your radical campaign today. There's more where this came from, right, people?
Yeah!
Ms. Kennewick? I just want to say it is totally an honor to be meeting you in person. Claude told us about your badass campaign, and I also want to say you're as inspiring as pulling a Misty Flip.
I'm sorry, honey, what's a Misty Flip?
It's a snowboarding move. I can teach you after you win the election and the snow season starts at Bogus Basin. You are so glamorous. I bet you could do it in heels, Ms. Kennewick.
Oh, I thank you, and call me Uma, honey.
That is so cool.
Yeah, we are so down with you. We love everything you stand for. Claude was telling us that you don't believe in wasting body parts of peeps who get wasted. You totally help sell them to citizens who work hard so they can afford, like, new boobs or whatever. That's like recycling. It's totally punk rock free market economics, man.
Well, thanks, dude. You know, when I was your age, I was a lot like you.
Really?
Yes, I was a self-styled punk who chafed against all forms of authority, and that's why I'm running for coroner, so you won't be subjected to the kind of coroner who'll bog down the death declaration process with lots of regulations and red tape that makes it hard for the rest of us to get on with our lives and rock on!
I knew it! I hope I'm as cool as you when I'm your age.
Keep the faith, and in a few years you'll be there!
Okay, troops, let's get jiggy with it for Kennewick.
Yeah!
I love Kennewick, punch another chat at the porn place, baby. I love Kennewick, get another chat and vote with me.
How much did you pay these supporters?
Nothing, Miss Kennewick. They love you.
Lyndon, call me Uma.
That is so cool.
Tune in next week for the next episode of Ukiah Digby for Coroner on the Sagebrush Variety Show.
Do you really want to spend your summer moving in square?
Are you a factory owner that's plagued with the constant din of rank and file work floor proles that are ungrateful for that job you provide for them? Are they missing the expression of your concerns for their well-being after you had to save their wages by canceling their pension program? Do they hold loud union protests outside of your property? Well, You can now up the ante and show them who's boss again with thermobaric grenades. That's right. We at Suppression Defense Systems have developed a small fuel air explosive that your personal or corporate security forces can employ at a moment's notice. So, when you throw your next executive shindig at the estate, and those restless blue-collar types are hootin' and hollering at the front gate, just bring out this little party pleaser and send them running. The 170 decibel shockwave will get your message across so you can get back to your croquet match with your Wall Street friends. Be the first in your gated community to shock and awe your neighbors and set the tone that matches your capitalist take-charge nature. However, thermobaric grenades may violate your community covenants, so be sure to instruct your legal staff to pencil whip a waiver into the local ordinances. Remember, corporate plundering requires a quiet environment, so don't let the rabble steal your thunder.
The Sagebrush Variety Show players started gardening several years ago as a reaction to the pesticide-laced and genetically modified foods. From a desire for self-sufficiency and from an intense dissatisfaction with ingredients that were shrunk-wrapped, refrigerated, and trucked across continents. Of late, big agribusiness has grown more and more predatory in their attempts to monopolize food production through predatory pricing, attacks on the organic standards, biopiracy, and meritless lawsuits. So we now consider gardening an act of rebellion in defense of our independence. Furthermore, if peak oil hits as hard and fast as our advisors are saying it will, gardening expertise will soon be a survival skill. Most importantly, we found that gardening is good for our mental health, and best of all, produces very, very good tasting food. The pick of the week for today's show is the tomatillo. Tomatillos are best known in North America as the main ingredient for salsa verde, although it can be prepared in a variety of ways in almost any recipe that requires or would benefit from a crisp, tart element. One of the advantages of tomatillos in salsa recipes is that they contain a pectin-like substance that thickens upon refrigeration, making it easy to scoop with chips. Tomatillos are one of the plants that exhibits a surprising range of flavors from one fruit to the other, even from the same plant. From candy sweet to puckeringly sour, it always tastes pleasant, but is best when handled by a cook who doesn't need to follow a recipe too literally and knows how to adjust. For those who had no idea what their salsa verde looked like before harvest, the tomatillo grows on vines and produces a round fruit that is encased in a papery shell, many compared to Chinese lanterns. The tomatillo is also known as the husk tomato. In addition to being referred to as tomatillo, which means little tomato, in Mexico, in other Spanish-speaking countries, it is called variously tomate de cáscara, tomate de fresadilla, tomate milpiro, tomate verde, mil tomate, or sometimes even tomate, in places where the tomato is called jitomate. North American names tend to be translations of the Spanish names, and a common error is to think, because of its popular names or aspects of its appearance, that it is closely related to, or a species of, the tomato. In fact, while it is in the same family, Solanaceae, as tomatoes, in addition to potatoes, tomatoes, eggplants, and tobacco, it is in a different genus, Physalis, which it shares with gooseberry and ground cherries. Indeed, it is sometimes called ground cherry, a practice which annoys the Sagebrush Variety Show players since we've grown and love both and find them to be quite distinct, although equally delicious. The Aztecs are believed to have been the first to domesticate the tomatillo, and it was a central part of the culture and cuisine. In the Aztec language, Nahuatl, the word tomatl means round and plump, and was a part of the name of several foods fitting that description. Not surprisingly, Europeans have been confused over the tomato-tomatillo issue since their arrival on the continent. Apparently, writers of the day used the root word interchangeably for at least two plants, and historians are still unsure whether explorers brought tomatoes or tomatillos with them on their return to Europe and the Mediterranean. At any rate, it would seem that only tomatoes caught on outside of South America. Tomatillos were virtually unseen in mainstream groceries and gardens until recently. The best time to harvest the fruit is right when it fills the husk to the splitting point. The husk is then brown and the fruit yellowish. It's unlikely you can get them at that point unless you grow them yourself, since supermarkets that carry them sell them green with the husk intact. However, we found the plant to be extremely versatile and still reasonably tasty, even when picked at an immature stage. For the homesteader or gardener, this adds to its advantage as a very high-yield crop. Furthermore, it stores very well, refrigerated as picked for several weeks, or dehulled and rinsed in the freezer for at least over the winter. And unlike some of the other crops which are famously easy to grow, tomatillos rate high on the nutrition per calorie scale, containing high proportions of vitamin C, calcium, folic acid, and vitamin A. Here are our reactions.
Tomatillo. Tart, clear, magnetic, saccharine, and wily. A plebeian secret. Evocative of a late autumn morning in Vermont, by a creek at the edge of the forest.
These tomatillos are almost candy sweet, producing a salsa that could nearly pass for a gooseberry jam without added sugar. Contrasting notes include a rhubarby sour and a fleshy citrus flavor. A crisp finish draws one back to the bowl with an involuntary alacrity.
Born in a husk that reminds one of a Chinese lantern shade, tomatillo is one of nature's surprising gifts that gives in many ways. The flavor is strikingly sweet and pleasant. They are our garden treasure.
If you like what you hear and want more information on growing this or other crops, visit our website at radioboise.org/sagebrush or email us at sagebrush@radioboise.org. Or, if you're already gardening, we'd love to hear what you're growing and eating and how you and your companions describe the experience. Tune in next week for more Sagebrush Variety Show Farm Reports. And remember, say no to corporate food.
Hey, end timers! Are you prepared for that big trip coming up soon? Well, you can't ascend that highway to heaven without your very own holy Hummer. That's right! You'll be a real holy roller in your anointed chariot of glory that would put Ben-Hur to shame. Holy Hummers all come with a certified seal of approval by the Christian Righteous Indignation Consortium. Holy Hummers only come in the chosen colors, like saintly silver, godly gold, paladin platinum, wisdom white, and biblical blue. There's even a stretch model for the more prolific Christian family, with room for everyone. So don't be left behind in some pagan pothole dodger. Get your new Holy Hummer today. Come on down to Malachi Motors and pick out your Holy Hummer before it's too late.
This week's Sagebrush Variety Show was conceived, written, performed, and produced by Robert McMinn, Kevin Bayhouse, April Hoy, and Gwen Sankirico, and was funded in part by a grant from the Green Institute. For more information on the content discussed on this program, visit our website at sagebrushvariety.org. Write to us at sagebrush@radioboise.org. Thanks for listening to the Sagebrush Variety Show.